All right, chapter 17, we have this divided into three divisions, and I'll give you the divisions real quick. The first division, I call this the systems exposed, we call it, verses 1 through 6. The second one, the system explained, verses 7 through 15. Third, the system extinguished, verses 16 through 18. The first part of this, the first about 15 verses, is pertaining to the first 3.5 years. And there came one of the seven messengers that had the seven big bowls talk with me, saying unto me, Come hither, and I'll show unto thee the judgment of the great whore that sitteth upon many waters, with whom the kings of the earth have committed fornication, and the inhabitants of the earth have been made to drink of the wine of her fornication. Now, this is simply an explanation of what is previously coming. You've talked here to talk about the previews of something yet to come. Well, the one that's doing the talking is the same one that is pouring out the big bowls of wrath. And we talked about them. These are the messengers all the way through. These are redeemed, glorified human beings that has been showing John through the tribulation time. So he said, Come hither and I will show thee. So this is an invitation to change John's viewpoint. And in verse 3 then, we see the viewpoint changed. So he carried me away in spirit unto the wilderness. So now, last we saw John, he was standing on the sands of the seas, wasn't he? Now he's being transported to another position to see things in another way. So here we find that he's to look at the great whore sitting upon many waters. Now the latter part of this chapter leaves us without any doubt of who these people are that we're talking about. So we'll wait till then to find out who they are. So this great unfaithful one. Now let's think of a woman like this, a great harlot. She's a woman that has submitted herself to others other than her own husband. And this is what we see in Christendom. The biggest majority of Christendom are submissive to the world, to systems, to different ways of doing things other than God's way. They set up organizations and man-made big business way of doing things. And so in this phase, they're submitting themselves to others other than what should be their head. But these aren't saved people. These have never known the Lord. And we find who this many waters are, that they are literally people. But we'll look at that later. And the kings of the earth have committed fornication with her. They've become intoxicated with her. So she here represents all of false Christendom. Now, I don't know if I've made this statement before or not, but anyway, this woman has to be put down before Jesus can get married. So we know that the marriage is going to come after chapter 18, which we'll read of when we get to chapter 19. But this false woman is going to be put down. A man cannot get married as long as there's another woman claiming this is her husband. So this claim is going to have to be done away with. He's not going to marry a harlot. We read concerning her then in verse 3. And he carried me away in spirit, there's no article in front of spirit, unto the wilderness. So now their viewpoint is from a wilderness standpoint. And I saw a woman sit on a scarlet colored beast, full of names of blasphemy, and having seven heads and 10 horns. Now this beast is the same as we read in chapter 13. It's the first beast, similar description. But here we find this woman riding on her, on the beast. This woman is sitting upon, and I don't know how many have done very much horseback riding or anything, but when you have a hold of rein of an animal, you can make that do just about anything you want to. James talked about a little bit in the Mars's mouth and how controllable they are. Well, this woman is sitting upon this world system. She's controlling it. And so here we see the religious confederation controlling the national confederation. This woman has a scarlet colored beast full of blasphemy. And we've talked about that before. The seven heads, the 10 horns will be explained later in the same chapter. But let's look at this woman in verse 4. And the woman was arrayed in purple, scarlet, gold, precious stones and pearls. Five different things of her beautification. Chapter 20, we find the bride arrayed by nation. But here we have another arrayment of this woman. Purple speaks of kingliness or reigning. And truly, this false woman will be reigning as royalty. Scarlet speaks of self-sacrifice. Now, I disagree with some of my colleagues along this line because some are real emphatic that this is Rome. And I believe that it's mostly Rome. But it also consists of the whole confederation of religion, which will include Buddhism, Mohammedanism, and any other kind of ism that might be. And we can see them there today. They're wanting to join. The Pope went down to talk to Buddhist worshippers not too long ago. And how anybody could worship that big, fat, ugly-looking thing, I don't know. But they're invited to come in, see, all into this conglomeration of religion. The purple speaks of her wanting to reign. Then the scarlet speaks of self-sacrifice. And I don't know of any religious group that's any more self-sacrificing than the Catholic Church. They're willing to give themselves for their doctrine, for their teaching. They're willing to do penance until death. I was reading not too long ago where in Mexico, they had to crawl up these steps on their knees. And a lot of these nuns lost their legs from the suffering of going up there. It's terrible. Well, this is a scarlet color. And the gold speaks of deity, how they want to be God's representative on this earth. The Pope claims to be God's representative. The precious stones always speaks of people, God's people usually. But these are controlled by this false religion. And then the pearls speak of that which is taken out of the depths of the sea, of the turning and tossing of the ocean, and the sufferings of the individual. Read the story of the goodly pearl and how Jesus came down searching for these pearls. But not only was she arrayed in that, but she had also a golden cup in her hand, full of the abomination and filthiness of her fornication. You just can't get worse than this, to take God's cup that should be used for worshiping him. Jesus said, can you drink of the cup that I drink from? So they identify themselves with taking his things. Now, Babylon did this, didn't they? They went down when they conquered Jerusalem and they took the things that should have been worshiping God and used them to worship Satan with, and that's when God changed the government of Babylon. But anyway, we can see that in this woman. And upon her forehead was a name written, Mystery Babylon the Great. So we're identifying this woman with the old Babylon, all the way back to Nimrod, and how horrible that was. And then we find that she's called the mother of harlots. And all of these, I'll put it this way, the most of the religions have in some way broken off or broken away from Catholicism. The Lutherans, the Episcopal, the Methodists, and all of these in some way have broken away from Catholicism. So if they are harlots, Rome is their mother, then we can see the mother of harlot here, can't we? Is that which those have come out of. And I saw the woman, verse 6, drunk with the wine, drunk with the blood of the saint, and with the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. So how she would kill all opposition. A report one time from South America. I can't remember who it was. I believe it was Sister Leggett, but I'm not sure. But she said that this young teenage girl got saved in a meeting there, and she went home so happy and thrilled and told her mother and everybody what she had done. And the next morning, the Catholic priest was there. And he told her, he said, now you're going to have to denounce all of this. She refused to do it, and they pulled her fingernails out one at a time, trying to get her to denounce this Christ of the evangelical. How horrible. I've got a book up there called 50 Years in the Rome, Church of Rome, I think is the name of it. And it's a terrible, terrible book. Read the Book of Martyrs by Fox, how bloodthirsty and terrible it is. So this isn't a new thing, is it, for concerning what religion will do? Made drunken of the blood of the saints and the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. And then John said, and when I saw her, I wondered with great admiration. And the angel said unto me, wherefore dost thou marvel? Now the word marvel, admiration, and wonder are all the same basic Greek word, meaning the same thing. To not understand. He said, I looked at this and I didn't understand what was going on. And this angel said to me, why are you bewildered? Why don't you understand that? And so now we find that he's going to tell John the mystery of this woman and the beast that carried her, which had the seven heads and the ten horns. Now we have an explanation. And the beast which thou sawest was, is not, shall ascend out of the bottomless pit. Now we saw this beast in chapter 13, and three times in the 13th chapter it says over and over that he was killed, raised from the dead, brought out of a pit. And so we have the same beast here. He was not, and he ascended out of a bottomless pit to go into perdition or go into destruction. So this will be the end of him when Jesus comes to set up his kingdom. And just as sure as he ascends out of a pit and brings forth a horde of demons out of this pit, so will he be destroyed, because God will allow this to happen. And they that dwell upon the earth shall wonder. So no one's really going to understand what's going on. If John couldn't understand, how we expect the people on the earth to understand? So they'll wonder also, whose name were not written in the book of life from the foundation of the world, when they behold the beast that was and is not. In fact, altogether we have six times that this is used. This is the fifth time in the book of Revelation. And we'll notice when the two witnesses were killed, it was the one who had come out of the pit that did this killing, wasn't it? And so how terrible this one is. And those that are not written in the book of life, of course they're going to be deceived. In fact, Jesus said that even the elect could be deceived if it were possible. And so those that are not saved, those that are not written in the book of life, will no doubt be deceived. They won't understand what's going on. The human mind can't understand spiritual things, and this will be a spiritual judgment. Verse 9, and here is the mind which hath wisdom. The seven heads are seven mountains on which the woman sitteth, and there are seven kings. So this plainly tells us what the mountains are. There's some people believe that these seven heads or seven mountains are the seven little hills that are around Rome. But these are not hills, these are mountains. And it plainly tells us in verse 9 that these are seven kings. So there's no reason to know what these seven heads are. There's seven kings that will be reigning with the Antichrist. And we saw that earlier. Five are fallen, one is, the other is not come. And when he cometh, he must continue a short space. Now, this will be this one particular head, see? And he'll be brought out, special, and he'll come forth. He wasn't before, but now he is. And when he comes, he's only going to continue a short time. This short space, it will be 3.5 years will be, and that is a short time. And the beast that was and is not, even he is the eighth. You see, he's an extra head. He's one of the seven to begin with, but he's going to be another one later on. He's going to be a different head altogether. The seven that we read aren't that powerful. This eighth one is going to be a power. Now, eight in the scriptures represent a new beginning. And so we're going to have a new beginning of evil here when this eighth king comes forth and is the seventh and goeth into destruction. And then he explains the ten horns that's on this beast. And the ten horns which thou seest are ten kings. So we're no doubt who this is. These horns represent kings. But these are different kings that we had in the seven heads. These kings have no kingdom. They're not reigning. They have power as kings, but no kingdom. They have authority. But we have within every kingdom, there are others who reign and have authority, yet they're not the head of a kingdom. And so I think is what we see here. No kingdom as yet, but receive power as king, as though they were king. This 3.5 years with the beast, 1 hour, That's the same as a short space, the first 10. These have one mind. These 10 kings will think just exactly like the Antichrist will think. Now, this is what God wants us to do with our king, isn't it? He wants us to think just exactly like he thinks. Paul says in Philippians 2, let this mind be in you, which is also in Christ Jesus. Paul wrote to the Corinthians and says, we have the mind of Christ, so we think like he thinks. But they have the mind of the Antichrist, and shall give their power and strength to the beast. Everything they have will go to this beast. Now, normally, a person who wants to be king wants to retain power and strength, but not here. They want to give it all to the enemy of God, to the Antichrist. These shall make war with the Lamb. So who are we talking about? We're talking about these kings that have no kingdom. These shall make war with the Lamb. The Lamb shall overcome them. So we know who's going to win this war, don't we? In fact, somebody says we know who's going to win because we read the last page of the book. So even though they think that they can win, it's not with God, it's not with a king, but with the slain one. And this is the power that we see going to be manifested, the power of the blood that was slain at the cross. It's the same one that's going to get married in the 19th chapter. It's the Lamb. So the Lamb shall overcome them because he is Lord. Lord. That's why he's going to overcome them, isn't it? He is Lord of lords and King of kings. He is greater than any lord and greater than any king, higher than all kingdoms. And they that are with him are called chosen and faithful. No doubt this is the same ones that's coming with him in the latter part of Revelation 19. He'll have an army with him. These are special people. These are called people and chosen people and faithful people that'll stand with him. They have learned to stand with him in the past. This is not the bride of Christ. She'll have a different place altogether. But this will be an army that will come with him. And he sitteth up. He saith unto me, the waters which thou sawest where the whore sitteth are people, multitude, nations, and tongues. So we're without doubt there who these are. And the whore has control of people to begin with. But something is going to destroy that control that this woman had. And we'll read in verse 16. And the 10 horns which thou sawest, now these are the ones with no kingdom, upon the beast shall hate the whore, and shall make her desolate and naked, and she shall eat her flesh, and burn her with fire. Now at the beginning of the tribulation, it's going to be the religious system that's going to be ruling. It's going to be riding this beast and having for complete control. But when he raises from the dead and proclaims his deity as a risen Savior, then he's going to shake off all religious power of the world. And who's going to help him do it? These 10 powers that are going to be associated with him. And so it's going to be these kingdoms, these kings, that's going to destroy and make this woman desolate. Now we see, again, I say, the details of her destruction in chapter 18. But we know that it's going to be the kings that's going to do this. And why are they going to do it? Verse 17, because God hath put into their heart. They think they're doing it, but not really. God's doing it, isn't he? God's going to put it in their heart to fulfill his will. Now they think that they're fulfilling the Antichrist's will, but it's really the will of God that this religious system will be put down. And give their kingdom unto the beast. So they'll begin worshiping then the Antichrist until the words of God be fulfilled. That's how long. When will it be fulfilled? When Jesus comes to set up his kingdom. And we had that a while ago. It is finished. It is over. This is it. And he's going to come at his designated time. And so, but they're going to have this reign until Jesus comes and puts an end to this reign. And the woman which thou sawest is that great city that we'll talk about in chapter 18 next week, if the Lord tarries, that great city which reigneth over kings of the earth. And we have seen this city reigning this whole church age, just about. Ever since Constantine became emperor of Rome, this city has been reigning. And that ends the chapter, and that ends our take.